Welcome to Arts Waves on Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Caitlin Louchard, who is the instigator, as it says on the website, and we'll discuss what that is, of the free theater company Romeo and Juliet, which is going to be playing at the Omni Commons in Oakland April 3rd and 4th and 10th and 11th at 8 p.m. It played this past weekend. This is an unusual production, and it is free. If you plan on seeing it, come early, because I guess the seats are limited. Let's talk a little bit about this and also about you. You're an actress. You've done work with Shotgun, with Cutting Ball, Berkeley Rep. You're also now working with this company called Free Theater. So let's start. What is Free Theater?
The Free Theater is a very new company that I am just starting. I have long been eager to make theater that is very stripped down and potent and just focuses on what is essential about theater, what is irreplaceable, which to me has something to do with the actor, the audience, and language, using language to create this imaginary space where anything can happen. And so I'm really experimenting with what happens if we just play with those essential elements. What kind of magic can we make? And also, it's so important to me that theater be accessible to all people because it is becoming more and more expensive to go see. And I feel that that's actually having an effect on the art itself. And so I'm really wanting to return sort of back to the center of what the art form is and then give it to the public for free.
You talk about what is essential to theater.
Yeah.
Does this mean that this production of Romeo and Juliet has no costumes, no lighting, no sets?
That's exactly what it means, yeah.
And is it in a round?
It is in the round, yeah.
Okay, so you're looking down at it.
Well, there is a balcony in the Omni, so there's balcony seating, but most of it is on the floor and just in a circle.
And it's kind of intimate then?
It's very intimate.
What brought you to decide to do this kind of show? And also, since your focus on your website at least says that you're still primarily an actress, mm-hmm. taking on essentially the artistic directorship
yes.
of a company.
Theater, to me, is in crisis right now, financially and artistically, I think. And because I have loved this art since I was a small child, since I was 7 or 8 years old, I feel an obligation to do something to make it vital and relevant for generations to come. When I started making theater in my backyard when I was 7 and 8, I directed things and made things with my friends. So I think that's actually probably sort of where I started.
And was that here in Berkeley?
That was in Palo Alto. I love being an actor, and the craft is very close to my heart. It's why I am on this planet. But I've been working with the Shotgun Players for about a year on staff, and seeing how much they have to struggle just to stay afloat really opened my eyes. And I wanted to find another model, see if there are other ways out there for this to work.
So what did you do?
What did I do? I emailed my friends and said, hey, guys, do you want to do a play? We can do it in Golden Gate Park. We'll do it for free to the public. We'll do Julius Caesar. And we did that last summer.
And how did that come together? In Golden Gate Park, did you have to get permits, or how did that work?
The AIDS Memorial Grove was very generous. They allowed us to work there free of charge. Everyone just decided to do it, and we did it.
And how was it? Did you have a good audience, big audience?
We did. It was a great success. We had 150 people or so every night, and I had some great feedback from some audience members who said that they felt alienated by Shakespeare in the past and that they actually really felt included in the experience and they could understand every word, which is very high praise.
Who did you have performing? The same folks who were performing in Romeo and Juliet? Or?
No, the Julius Caesar was a whole bunch of different professional actors in the area who were interested, a bunch of really powerful actresses, Lauren Spencer, Siobhan Doherty. Some of those people are going to be coming back for Henry IV, Part 1, which we're doing this coming summer.
And this is kind of gender whatever, right?
Yeah.
What's behind that What's decision? Behind? Because years and years ago, I saw Dame Judith Anderson as Hamlet, and it was dreadful.
Oh, no. I think the idea is, in theater, everything is made up anyway. It's all make-believe.
Right.
So I have this theory that maybe it's possible that a tiny woman can pretend to be Brutus, which I did last summer, and make the audience believe that she is Brutus.
And was Julius Caesar male or female?
Female. Maura Halloran played Caesar.
Who played Calpurnia, a man?
Yes, a man, Eric Kerr.
And did anybody kind of scratch their head and go, this is kind of...
Well, what ended up happening, which is what I was hoping would happen, was that after a couple of minutes, the audience forgets what the genders are supposed to be. They forget what they were expecting, I suppose. And they just buy into the story. And somehow, because these actors are working so vigorously and truthfully with the language and with the story, it just becomes true. And it doesn't matter what sex these actors are. They are living the spirits of these characters.
So could you conceivably, under those circumstances, have a white woman playing Othello?
That's a great question. I would not want to do that. I think that's a great conversation to have. I want to ask big questions in this company, and I think that's a conversation I would certainly want to have with my collaborators. But my impulse is no.
Why?
Well, one reason is that there are not many characters of color written into Shakespeare, and to take that role away from an actor of color seems wrong.
Caitlin Louchard, let's get back to this production of Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Okay, so you do it last summer. It's a big success, and you're kind of going, well, now what, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why the choice of Romeo and Juliet, and how did this one come together? Because I noticed that among the people you have here are Mary Baird, who was in India Inc. at ACT,
yeah.
Michael Patrick Gaffney, who has been on virtually every single stage
yes.
in the Bay Area, Rotimi Agbabiaki from SF Mime Troupe. You've got a lot of great people here.
Yeah.
So how did this particular one come together?
My friend Marisa Wanless came to see Caesar, and she's a wonderful actress and teaching artist in the Bay Area and has always wanted to direct. And she has done some directing. This is her professional directing debut. She was really inspired by the project. And we had coffee one day, and I said, you know, I really want to do Romeo and Juliet in this similar way, stripped down with gender-fluid casting. And she said, right on, I want to do it too. And so we just put our brains together and tried to figure out how to make it happen. And we found there is a particular union code that we can work under called the Member Project Code so that we can invite union actors in. We were shocked and delighted that all these wonderful people said yes. And I think actors are hungry for this kind of work that is so vigorous and potent.
And you decided to keep it free.
Yeah. It's a wild, wild experiment, but I think it's worth exploring.
There have been free events that happened throughout the city, you know,
mm-hmm.
all companies occasionally do free events, but starting with a company that only does free events
right.
is something else again.
Yeah. The gift economy is something that I'm very interested in. People who can give do give, and those who aren't in a place to give at the moment come and enjoy and are part of the community regardless, that there is no barrier to access.
When you're working on Shakespeare for the masses, if you want to call it that,
mm-hmm.
if you're working on Shakespeare and you know that the language is often both elevated and at the same time it can be obscure.
Yeah.
What can you do, particularly since it's stripped down,
yeah.
and particularly since you're already starting with the fact that genders are fluid, how do you create a way for the audience to enter the play?
I think Shakespeare done well is understandable. That is the actor's job, is to make this text intelligible, and not just through articulation, but through completely living the ideas in the language and living the story. And because we have no sets or props or costumes, we have to do that even more because there's nothing to sort of help us with that. And I think that's part of what makes this such a powerful way of working, because the actual theatrical event becomes so much more muscular and athletic, because we have to use these words to create this world, to communicate these ideas and to share the story. And that, to me, is what is most exciting about the theater, that language has this capacity to connect us in this magical, imaginary realm where anything is possible. And I think that there's a possibility there, too, in that realm where anything is possible. I think that we can reimagine the world. We can reimagine the way we see one another. That's part two of why I feel it's so important to break out of our normal casting patterns, because I think it's really important that any human being be able to live these archetypes, that every human being has infinite potential to be anything. And I think by doing these plays in this way, we give everyone in the experience an opportunity to sort of recast themselves.
When I go to theater, Caitlin Louchard, what I see at some of these theaters is an audience that looks as if they need to put their walkers in the entrance. You're 28. You're under 30. This puts you in a different framework than what we see. And I know that Tony Taccone over at Berkeley Rep, I know that Carrie Perloff at ACT, I know that Jason Menadakis at Marin, Loretta Greco over at The Magic, all of them are working overtime. And even the Aurora is having the same issue, trying to involve younger people in theater. And they're having a damned hard time doing it.
Yes.
When you did your show last year, what was the age range of the audience?
It was spectacular. It was so exciting. There were babies in strollers, which was really thrilling. But it was quite a young crowd, but mixed. There were people in their 40s and 50s and 60s.
You're trying, on some level, I would guess, to create theater that younger folks can deal with because they seem to have walked away from it, except for big musicals.
Absolutely, yeah. One of my huge purposes as a theater artist is to find a way for this art form to survive, and one of those ways is to make it relevant to the younger generation.
Well, why do you think doing a show like this makes it more relevant than, say, putting it on a stage, a proscenium stage?
I think because there's something removed about that. You're not part of the event when the proscenium is over there. Marisa, the director, and I have been talking a lot about how to make this an event and an inclusive event where people really walk away feeling like the world is different afterwards, or they have been, their world is different, their heart has been shifted. And Marisa came to me with this great idea of, why can't theater be more of a celebration like it used to be? Why can't we gather around a fire and listen to these stories with rapt attention while eating delicious food and drinking wine? And then maybe we sing and dance around the fire afterwards. So there's going to be a dance party every night after every performance at the Omni. And we have delicious food being served by Rima Seal. She calls it Arab street food made with California love.
You spoke before about theater being more muscular, and I, you know, there are certain theatrical terms that when I talk to all of these theater directors, they throw out these terms, and when I think of muscular, I'm thinking, oh, what, they go down to the gym? What do you mean by muscular?
Muscular is a word, actually, that our director uses when she wants us to attack the language with more energy. So Romeo enters at the very beginning of the play. He's bummed out, and I was allowing that sort of state to sort of generalize the action, and it became lazy. Does that make sense? So really using each word to communicate what we want to communicate and really living it in our whole bodies, allowing the language to affect the whole body.
Well, when you say you kind of felt lazy, it means that it was too low energy or what?
So something that my acting teacher told me over at the Atlantic Theater Company, she said that when acting Shakespeare, you need to think the thought and then speak the thought as if you're coining it for the very first time. And if you can do that, if you can actually have the thoughts that Shakespeare is writing and utter them as those thoughts are being coined in your mind and in your soul, then you are tapping into something truly divine. And that is the goal. And that requires a tremendous amount of focus and muscularity and presence.
Okay, so what's the difference between that and, say, doing Mamet?
You know, that's a good question. I studied at the Atlantic, which is Mamet's school. I don't know that there is a whole lot of difference. I think that Shakespeare requires a greater athleticism and greater endurance on the part of the actor because there are so many big ideas and big words to live and to share.
You're listening to an interview with Caitlin Louchard, who is playing Romeo in Romeo and Juliet from the Free Theater at the Omni Commons, 4799 Shattuck Avenue, this coming weekend, April 3rd and 4th, and the following weekend, 10th and 11th at 8 p.m. There are no tickets, so come early. You can go to their website, thefreetheater.com. Caitlin Louchard, you use the word athleticism and then, of course, before muscularity.
Yeah.
It almost sounds as if you're using these gym metaphors.
For sure. I do push-ups before I go on stage, and it's an exhausting, exhausting thing to do. It's tremendously physical.
One of the issues that I've found in modern theater, and it has created, I know, great problems at a place like the Geary, which, of course, is huge, is that modern acting is all mumblecore, it seems. Nobody projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, that's probably symptomatic of actors doing more and more film and TV work. To me, that is not helpful for theater. I really, as an actor, feel that it is my job to be a conduit for these words, and that it is my job to completely live this language in order to share it with everyone.
What about, you know, what they call various aspects of the method? How does that fit in? How does the idea of taking the fact that your friend died 20 years ago and converting that into the moment when Juliet dies, for instance,
right.
Is that part of what you're doing?
It's not. Not for me. I can't speak for my other actors. Everyone has their own process. But to me, that would be like maddening, for one thing. But also, I think distracting from the moment. What I feel is my job is to figure out what Romeo is doing in the scene, figure out what his sort of essential action is, and then figure out how I can open up myself to play that action with all that I have, with all of my tools, all of my humanity, and just play it for all I have. And if I weep, I weep, but that will be a byproduct of my pursuing this action with such vigor and really buying the given circumstances, really making believe, which is what this art is. It's just, we're just making believe.
A lot of people, in terms of trying to deal with Shakespeare, try to find ways to accommodate, say, modern thought. So you get, you know, an As You Like It set mm-hmm. during 1910, or you get yeah. Richard III set in Germany.
Yeah.
How do you feel about those ideas?
I think they're fine. I think they're interesting. It's not what I'm interested in doing. I want these stories to speak to us today in our given circumstances now. So we use modern dress and flashlights for torches.
When you talk about this kind of theater, I saw the first part of Coast of Utopia at Shotgun, and there's very, very little in the way. There were some sets, but not really. I mean, you had to really imagine that you were in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of what you're striving for, that kind of idea that the audience needs to kind of create the scene in their mind?
Exactly, yes. I have the sense that if we give the audience a setting or a time period, a theme, a concept, that it robs them of their ability to imagine whatever they're going to imagine. And whatever they're going to imagine, I think, will be infinitely more interesting than what we can give them visually. It's like the Greek messenger. When the Greek messenger comes on to tell the audience what horrific thing has just happened, what the audience imagines is a million times more horrific than what we could do on stage with blood and all those things.
Do you think that part of the reason that theater has to turn in that direction is because when it comes to film, CGI can now do anything, so it's almost like no matter what you do on a stage, it will never equal the kind of images you see on a screen?
Sure, I think that's true. And I honestly, I don't think that that's, to me, essential to what theater is. To me, theater is about making believe, and it's about sharing space with storytellers and listeners, and together creating something that doesn't exist. And by doing that, we learn empathy. We can change our thinking. It can do all kinds of things.
One issue that comes up in terms of theater, and I've seen it a few times, and again, the theater directors, the artistic directors, have to cope with this, is that our current generations, ranging from mine to yours, we've all got ADD because of our cell phones and how we function in society, how it's almost impossible to sit still for 2 hours. How do you counter that in terms of trying to interest people in Shakespeare?
I think once they're in the room, it's fine. It's getting them into the room. Maybe that might be more difficult because this work is so engrossing because, like I said, there's no set, there are no costumes. So it's all about the electricity between the actor and the audience. And I think that once the audience steps in, they become part of this event in a way almost like a dance or a music concert. I can't imagine that it would be boring.
Do you do any cutting of the text?
Yes, we did cut it down. So it is now 2 hours instead of the usual, like, four. I did not cut it. It was Marisa Wanless, our director. She teaches with the San Francisco Shakespeare Festival, with their Midnight Shakespeare program, which does after-school Shakespeare.
I want to change subjects, Caitlin Richard. 2013,
yes.
You bicycled across America from Berkeley to Bar Harbor?
I did.
And wrote a blog about it.
I did.
How did that come about, and what were some of your experiences?
Gosh, so I've been a theater maker since I was 8 years old, and I've been on this very focused path since I was 8 years old. I thought, man, I need to start doing the things on my bucket list while I'm still young, and I really want to live a full life. And so I thought I would do this wild thing. I also just really wanted to see the world, and I wanted to see it in a way that was very intimate and that wasn't going to hurt anybody, is what I say. I didn't want to buy a plane ticket.
Did you go with friends, or...?
I had planned to, but then a couple days before we were supposed to leave, I fell and hurt my left wrist and had to change plans at the last minute. I was alone for about 1,000 miles between Minneapolis and Montreal. But other than that, I put out the word to the cycling community, and I had people join me along the way. It was really a lovely experience.
How long did you train for it?
I didn't. I cycle all around the bay just to get around, so I had that going for me. And also, I just started slow. And I sort of trained on the way.
You know, Cheryl Strayed in Wild, right? She had books that she'd tear out the pages. Did you have an iPad with you or iPod to listen to? Or what was going on there?
I had an iPod to listen to. I listened to a lot of audiobooks and a lot of Joni Mitchell. I listened to Blue and Ladies of the Canyon, like, over and over and over and over again. I shipped a lot of stuff home. Whenever I got to a post office, I would often just ship things back just to cut down on weight.
You had a big backpack or on
No, I had saddlebags on my bike. I packed a lot of food with me, and then I also sent ahead care packages to be picked up, dehydrated soups and things like that, because I did a lot of camping.
How do you think that affects your acting?
It's funny. I started the Coast of Utopia trilogy before my trip, and then I finished the third installment after I got back. And Patrick Dooley, the director, was like, gosh, this is so much better than last year. Actors need to bike across the country. I think it was a long time to just sort of sit with myself, and I got to know myself better, which is helpful for an actor. One of the biggest takeaways from that journey was, there's a saying, and I forget where it's from, but it's a person is a person because of other people. And I really felt that on that journey. I was constantly taken in by strangers, and I had the most amazing interactions with just random people that I would never have an interaction with. And I think that bringing that back really sparked in me a desire to make theater a place where that can happen.
Caitlin Louchard, give an example of the most intense moment on the trip, if you can.
Coming down from Crater Lake at 46 miles an hour with a side wind, that was really intense, just in terms of, like, I thought I was going to die. But, like, really beautiful moments. We were cycling through, gosh, I'm forgetting the name. It was a town in southeastern Washington State. I was with my friend Rachel, who I met on the road, and I needed a new inner tube. And we cycled past a garage sale, and we said, hey, is there a bike shop in town? And the woman was like, And she said, but it's a really hot day. Do you want to come and swim in our pool? We're like, what? So we ended up swimming in her pool. We ended up staying for dinner. She insisted that we stay overnight. And then we corresponded for a while. It was just the most lovely surprise act of generosity.
Any point where you were scared other than coming down off a hill?
Not truly. I never
really
feared for my safety. Not from other humans, for sure.
Do you see yourself doing something like that in Europe or Asia now?
You know, I don't. The thing is, like, I didn't do it because I love long-distance cycling. I did it because I wanted to go out and see the world and meet people. And I think that quest remains.
Well, when you're in the Bay Area or New York or major metropolitan areas, you know, red state, blue state, what did you find? Did you find any difference in how the people treated you? Did anybody talk about politics?
We ended up being taken in by a lot of fairly conservative Christian families. And I was shocked by how many families in the U.S. say grace over dinner. And it was lovely being welcomed into that. It was a really special thing. And I found that I had to sort of check my assumptions and check my judgments as someone with liberal ideas and coming from a very progressive background. And I never felt judged by them, and they never asked.
Did you ever talk to them about theater?
I did, yes.
And what was their reaction? Because I'm sure for most of those people, theater means going to New York, spending $150,
yeah,
and seeing a big show, mm-hmm, unless they're actually involved in community theater.
Right, exactly. A lot of people will say, oh, you do theater? Oh, I did that as a kid. I wish I could still do it, or I wish we had a theater. You know, and that, too, set my mind a spinning. I want everyone to have this thing that, to me, is so powerful and so important.
Well, I think one of the things that happens in our technological society is that there is no communal space,
exactly,
anymore, except for a church.
Right, right.
Or a theater.
Exactly. And to me, theater has been my sort of secular church.
Caitlin Louchard, what do you do to get more people involved other than say, hey, come to our free show? What can you do? How can you get people to experience this thing that all they know about it is, you know, proscenium arches?
Fun Cheap SF is great. I think a lot of young people go there looking for things to do. Not just things to do, but ways to experience community that's maybe not in a bar. That's been a very valuable thing for us. And I think also this idea of making it really a celebration, a wholly inclusive celebration.
Moving on past Romeo and Juliet, if this is a big success, do you plan on doing more Romeo and Juliet this year before you start tackling Henry, or is Henry just the next thing?
If we could do more Romeo and Juliet, that would be great. We're using a very specific contract with the Actors Union, so it would be difficult to make that happen. But yeah, so on to Henry is sort of what's next.
Caitlin Louchard, what have you got coming up in terms of your own acting apart from free theater? Anything?
Yeah, this summer I'm going to be playing Izzy in Central Works' Moby Dick adaptation called Project Ahab, or Eye of the Whale. Izzy is Ishmael. I'm very excited to be playing Ishmael. And then in the fall, I am playing Helena in The Rover over at Shotgun, directed by M. Graham Smith.
You've been listening to an interview with Caitlin Louchard. The Free Theater's production of Romeo and Juliet is at Omni Commons April 3rd and 4th and 10th and 11th at 8 p.m. That's at 4799 Shattuck Avenue in Berkeley. You can get more information by going to thefreetheater.com. Next summer, they will be doing Henry IV, Part 1. Do you have a venue for that yet?
It's John Hinkle Park in Berkeley.
I'm Richard Walensky on Arts Waves, the Monday edition of Cover to Cover.